Hello. Welcome to tonight's No Pandemic Profiteering Iowa Teletown Hall meeting. My name is Sue Dinsdale, and I'll be your moderator. I am the Executive Director of Iowa Citizen Action Network, and we're a founding member of the Iowa Lower Drug Prices Now Coalition, along with the Alliance for Retired Americans. We have coalition partners and co-sponsors, including AFSCME Council 61, Americans for Democratic Action Iowa, the Des Moines Firefighters, Indivisible Iowa, the Iowa Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO, the Iowa Main Street Alliance, Iowa State Education Association, Iowa Voices, National Association of Social Workers Iowa, Progress Iowa, Protect Our Care, Tax March Iowa, and others. I want to welcome you all and thank you for joining us tonight. Over the next hour, we'll be talking about what action Congress is taking to guarantee affordable medicines for coronavirus treatments in the upcoming relief packages, and what we can all do to ensure that the drugs and vaccines in development will be available at low or no cost. We'll be joined by a few special guests, and we'll take questions from those who have joined the call tonight. If you have a question, press zero on your phone keypad, and you'll be connected to one of our facilitators. So before we get started with our speakers, we have a quick poll question to help familiarize you all with the system. Is everybody ready? Here's the poll question. And please listen for the responses and press the number that you want to select as your response. Here we go. Who is your favorite superhero? If your favorite superhero is Superman, press 1. Spider-Man, press 2. Wonder Woman, press 3. And if your favorite superhero is Batman, press 4. Please make your selections, and in just a few seconds, this system will compile the results. While we're waiting, remember to like our Iowa Lower Drug Prices Now Facebook page. You can either search for it or go to www.iowacan.org and find the link. So it looks like this group chose Wonder Woman as the favorite superhero. Great choice. So perfect job on the poll. Now it's time to start the program. Our first speaker tonight is someone who needs no introduction. He's our very own Iowa superhero, Senator Tom Harkin, who represented our state for over 40 years. And here's a little fun fact for you. Because of his work to encourage prevention and research at the CDC, the Tom Harkin Global Communications Center at the CDC is named after him. I have had the pleasure of working with Senator Harkin and getting to know him through the years, and I am especially proud of our work together to pass the Affordable Care Act. We're so grateful he could join us tonight to talk about the critical issue of prescription drug affordability and why Congress must take long overdue action to make medicines affordable. Welcome, Senator Harkin.
Sue, thank you very much, and through you, thank all of the people at ICANN for all that you do and for all your progressive leadership in Iowa going back for so many years. I've always cherished my close working relationship with ICANN through the years, and thank you for doing this town hall meeting on drug pricing. Because what we're facing now with COVID-19 and looking and trying to figure out the vaccines coming down the road, this has to be one of our top agenda items for Congress and for the people of this country to be concerned about. Let me just start by saying that during my 30 years in the Senate, for most of that time, I served on two committees. I served on the Appropriations Committee and the Health Committee. On the Appropriations Committee, I was chair or ranking member, depending on whether Democrats or Republicans ran the Senate, for almost 25 years of the Subcommittee on Appropriations that funded the National Institutes of Health and the Center for Disease Control and all of Health and Human Services. And including everything that covers Medicare and Medicaid. I also took over chairmanship of the Health Committee after Senator Kennedy died in 2009. I just tell you all that because I learned a lot. about the kind of government, or I should say taxpayer-funded research on diseases and drugs which are used to cure. Through the NIH, funded research at universities and laboratories all over America, and by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention that does its own in-house research. And they also are funding a lot of laboratories, again, outside of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. So the government funds early basic research through NIH, through DARPA, that's the defense agency, DARPA. In fact, I got a lot of money for breast cancer research back in the early 1990s, not from NIH, but from DARPA. And they fund a lot of research at universities around America. And the third one was BARDA. That's the biological, I forget all the acronyms, but that's in that's in the Department of Health and Human Services, BARDA, B-A-R-D-A. Now, here's what happens. The period between discovery and basic research and the proof of concept has been left basically to pharma and to venture capitalists. I might also add there are some states now that are funding this kind of research. I was kind of halfway involved in California when they set up the Institute for Regenerative Medicine in 2005, and that is basically to conduct stem cell research, because some of you may remember that then President Bush had put some restrictions on stem cell research at the national level. So California started their own stem cell research institute in California. Well, this leads me to this. You may have heard or will hear about using a relatively new screening process that will accelerate vaccine discovery. It's called mRNA, messenger RNA. I had a lot of hearings on this when it was developed in the late aughts around 2008, 2009, 10. I had a lot of hearings on this. It was developed in an academic lab, quite frankly, at Harvard. They got a lot of NIH funding. And then some of the developers of the scientists that did this commercialized it. And they got a lot of venture capitalists to invest in it. And quite frankly, now there's a private company called Moderna, M-O-D-E-R-N-A, Moderna. You can look it up. Interestingly enough, they use as their stock symbol mRNA, which is the same thing that had been discovered. Well, why am I telling you this? Because Moderna, that basically did all the discovery based on taxpayers-funded dollars, last week they were just awarded $483 million from BARDA. That's the Health Department of Health and Human Services. Out of the money that Congress passed that last Friday to accelerate the manufacture of COVID-19 vaccine. Well, you might say, what's wrong with that? Well, nothing except this. Their stock price went from $19, which it was earlier this year, to $52 a share now. Also last week, Johnson & Johnson, you know, the baby powder company, Johnson & Johnson Drugs, also got a BARDA help, a grant of $450 million last week. And their stock price went from $109 to $154. So here's what I'm saying. These companies are going to be accelerating and using this new system, mRNA, which is used to produce proteins from genes and accelerate this discovery. That's all good. I'm all for that. But what I don't know is I don't know the terms of these grants that were given to these companies. But I will bet you my bottom dollar that there's no terms that would include a government approval of the pricing of those drugs when they come on the market. And it would seem to me that should be just essential that this happens. And that's what we need to start looking into. All of this money, your money, taxpayer dollars, that are going into this, even though the basic discovery was also made by taxpayers' dollars, we have to have some control on the what's called the release price and the pricing of these drugs as they come out. Because most of it's been funded by taxpayer dollars. So the second thing I want to impart to all of you is that there's some movement taking place in Congress. In December, the House of Representatives passed a bill called H.R. 3. You can look it up. It's the drug pricing bill. Now, a lot of compromises were made and things like that. It's not as progressive as I would want, but the progressive caucus in the House was able to get some changes in the bill. But it passed the House. I think, my notes here tell me, about right around December the 12th, I think. Immediately, Senator Mitch McConnell in the Senate said he was not even going to take the bill up. But what it does is it gives the Ministry of Health and Human Services the authority to negotiate prices on a minimum of 50 of the highest priced drugs in Medicare, up to 250 of these branded drugs that have the greatest cost to the healthcare system. What they use is an international price index. They use six countries, average out the price, and basically the secretary can use his authority to negotiate those prices with drug companies. Now, this is only in the Medicare system, okay? This is only has to do with Medicare. They give the authority to the secretary to also negotiate prices in the launching of new drugs in the private sector. But you have to have a better Secretary of Health and Human Services in order to do that. So what we need to do is to ensure that we have good oversight in the House and the Senate over how Big Pharma is spending the taxpayer money to develop these vaccines for COVID-19. I have just two other things I want to impart to you. We should let manufacturers know up front, not expect to reap big profits from any COVID-19 vaccine. One other thing, I recently had occasion to get a prescription drug, and I'm trying to find my notes on it. Would you know it? I can't find it now. Where is it here? It was, I can't find it right now. I had it here in front of me. I can't do any of that stuff anymore. But I just had a prescription drug from my doctor in Des Moines, and I went to get it. It was for 90 tablets. It was $484 for 90 tablets. Mm-hmm. Well, I said, that's crazy. Well, I talked to Dr. Peterson. Greg Peterson is my doctor in Des Moines, great guy. He said, well, that is outlandish. And he said, that was at CVS. Well, then he said that maybe you can get it better at Walgreens. Well, same thing. Well, I belong to Costco. I love Costco. So I went to the pharmacy at Costco. What was at CVS was $484 for 90 tablets. I got at Costco 100 tablets for $48. Now, you tell me, how can that be? And you know darn well the drug company that makes these, they aren't losing any money at $48. But, boy, they're making a killing at $484. Lastly, since we're all indoors and watching a lot of TV, which I don't watch a lot of, I can tell you in watching television over the last month or so, I am just shocked at the number of ads on television for prescription drugs. tests. Not like you can go out and buy them. You have to have a prescription from a doctor to get them. Just one prescription drug after another, of course, with a whole line of things that may affect you adversely if you take them. You know, this should be made illegal. They should not be able to advertise prescription drugs to the general public. And I'll tell you this. I remember when it happened. It happened under the George W. Bush administration. Before that, you never saw an ad for a prescription drug. But the floodgates were opened. One after another, they started advertising. And now it's just all over. Any network, anywhere you go, you see these ads for prescription drugs. Their whole idea is to get you, the consumer, to go to your doctor and tell your doctor that's what you want. Well, I think we ought to have a law that says that if you have an FDA-approved prescription drug, you cannot advertise to the general public. If you want to advertise in medical journals, which it used to do, that's what it used to be, and goes to doctors and hospitals, that's fine, but not to the general public. And with that, thank you very much for giving me this time. I appreciate it. But again, on your congressmen and your senators to make sure that your taxpayer dollars that are going to places like Johnson & Johnson and Moderna, that we insist that they can't launch these new drugs unless it's approved by the Secretary of Health and Human Services in accordance with pricing of drugs generally, and so they don't make these huge profits. So thank you again, Sue, and I'll yield the mic.
Thank you so much, Senator Harkin. Your thoughts are right in line with everything that we've been thinking, and I appreciate you reminding us that it's up to us to push our elected leaders to ensure that coronavirus vaccines and medicines are affordable and that it's our taxpayer dollars that are paying for them, and we have to have some oversight, and we need to be able to control the release price. Before I turn the mic over, I'm going to remind our callers, if they press zero, if they have a question they'd like to ask, our screeners will visit with you, and we'll try to get you on the line here in a little while. So next, I'm going to turn the mic over to Margarita George, Campaign Director of Lower Drug Prices Now. She's joining us from Washington, D.C. to report on what is happening with the COVID relief efforts and what other people around the country are doing to ensure that we'll be able to get the medicines being developed with our taxpayer funding. Welcome, Margarita.
Thanks for having me, Sue. It's such a pleasure to be on. And since I'm in Washington, D.C., I will just say to Senator Harkin, we really miss you here. So I know it's hard to plead with people to come back, but this is a very challenging time in Washington, particularly on this issue, because of some of the things that the senator was relating. Let me introduce myself and my organization. My name is Margarita George. I'm the National Campaign Director for Lower Drug Prices Now. That's a national coalition of more than 60 organizations across the country. Of course, in Iowa, ICANN and the other groups that Sue mentioned are part of our coalition. We are taking on Big Pharma and fighting for reforms that will make prescription medicines affordable for everyone, no matter where they live, what they look like, or what's in their wallet. You know, for so long, Big Pharma and their lobbyists have rigged the system so that the big drug corporations can exercise monopoly control over prices. They use that control, exactly as the senator said, to price gouge people on everything from insulin to cancer treatments, high blood pressure. At this point, it doesn't matter whether the drug has been around for a long, long time or whether it's one of these cutting-edge new drugs. The prescription drug companies have figured out how to rig the system in order to maximize their profit. And I'm so glad that the senator talked about the massive taxpayer investment in innovation. That is really something that's overlooked in a lot of instances, but a lot of experts estimate that about 80% of innovation and research is paid for by public money. So almost all of the work, the early research on molecules, on the chemistry and biology of drugs, is done with public money in a lot of these research institutions that we see around the country. Taxpayer money actually is all over the big pharma business model. And I smiled when the senator was talking about the many TV commercials that we all watch whenever anything comes on. It's like every other commercial is a prescription drug commercial. But what will really infuriate you is when you learn that not only are taxpayers paying for research and development, we're paying for the tax write-offs that companies get for putting those commercials on the air. And the senator is exactly right. It should be illegal. In fact, it's only legal in two countries in the world to advertise prescription drugs directly to consumers on television that way, here in the United States and in Australia. So, and I do remember years ago, back in 2003, the Part D law that was passed under the Bush administration that actually facilitated that. And since then, we have seen an explosion in prescriptions. Companies like Johnson & Johnson, Gilead, Moderna, Eli Lilly, take that publicly funded research, the taxpayer-funded research. They refine the drugs, they conduct clinical trials, and then they market the drugs under their brand name. They can launch the price at any level that they want, and periodically you'll come across something in the paper, you know, a drug launched at $10,000 a month, or, you know, $1,000 for a pill or what have you. That is because we have this totally crazy practice of just handing over taxpayer money to the companies with no strings attached and then leaving it up to them, right? We give them monopoly control over the prices. For 20 years, they can charge whatever they want for that brand name drug. And that puts the rest of us at extreme risk. And we know that that was true even before COVID. Even before COVID, we were hearing the stories of people who couldn't get affordable insulin. They couldn't get EpiPens, cancer meds, estrogen, you name it. Millions of people in this country have to ration medicine, skip doses, go without prescriptions because they can't afford pharma's prices. In 2020, right, already in 2020, we are only in April, the drug corporations have already raised the average cost of prescription medicines over 5%. That's double the rate of inflation. So we know darn well that if you are a senior or if you are a working class person, you cannot keep up with those kinds of price increases. Serious reform that would stop the drug companies from price gouging and really putting people's lives at risk, because let's face it, that is what's happening here, are long overdue. And we did see some very good action late last year in the House when Speaker Pelosi and Democrats passed the Lower Drug Costs Now Act, which would have finally allowed Medicare to negotiate with the prescription drug companies for lower prices. But as the senator said, it has gone nowhere in the Senate because there's been complete obstructionism from Leader Mitch McConnell. When it comes to COVID, it creates a real problem that kind of obstructionism is allowed to govern in the Senate. There's never been a better time. And this pandemic, I think, is teaching us a lot of things. But it's really clear there's never been a better time to take on pharma profiteering than now. Congress has given these companies over $3 billion in taxpayer dollars to expedite research and development of treatments, vaccines, therapeutics for COVID. We all want those medicines. Of course we need them. We're not going to ultimately beat this virus without a massive inoculation. But the truth is, those drugs cannot work if people can't get access to them because they're not affordable. So the work that we are doing in partnership with folks in Iowa and a lot of other states is to push the Trump administration and to work with leaders of Congress to get explicit language in the coming relief packages that would ensure that the vaccines, the treatments, the drugs that are created with taxpayer money to address the COVID crisis are available to everybody at low or no cost. There should be no cost because, in fact, we've already paid for them. Right, that's $3 billion of our taxpayer money, the dollars of our taxpayer money have already gone into those drugs. And the reality is we can't keep charging taxpayers over and over and over again for the same thing. Now, we did ask the Trump administration already whether they would commit to not giving any one company a monopoly on any of these drugs. and whether they would essentially block monopoly control of drug pricing. And some leaders in Congress actually made that direct request to HHS Secretary Azar, who comes out of the prescription drug industry. He was a former exec, Eli Lilly. And the response was very disappointing. Secretary Azar would not guarantee that any of these medicines would be affordable. In fact, what he said is, we have to work with the prescription drug companies to make sure that they get a return on their investment. So that's as cute as you can get when we're in the middle of a pandemic that could kill millions of people, and the HHS secretary is more worried about pharma's profits than about our own investment, our own taxpayer money, that should at minimum yield vaccines that help to prevent illness for average folks. We didn't stop there, and we're not going to. History has shown that Big Pharma is going to do everything possible to exploit this crisis. Johnson & Johnson, the lead company that is expected to come up with the vaccine, they're actually on a huge PR tour. You know, they are acting like they haven't received any money, and this is just philanthropy on their part, when in fact they've gotten over $600 million at this point to develop the vaccine. We know they have a terrible history. We're actually doing a telethon hall meeting with folks in New Jersey in a couple of days. We know that that is not a company like most of these other pharma companies that we can trust to put public health ahead of their profits. So it's really up to us. We together have to stop them by pushing elected leaders in Congress to take action in the upcoming relief packages. You know, Big Pharma might not care about public health. It's clear from their pattern of behavior that they're primarily interested in profit. But elected officials should, and many of them do. And so we are going to spend the next few months pushing members of Congress and members of the Senate to make sure that there is accountability for public money, that vaccines and treatments that are created with taxpayer funds are affordable and accessible to everybody, that we have some transparency about what is in those contracts between HHS and these companies, and finally, that we block any monopoly control over pricing that would put Big Pharma in charge of who gets medicines and vaccines to respond to the COVID crisis. So I'm so happy to be with you all tonight and looking forward to hearing your questions. And thank you so much, Sue. I'll turn it back over to you.
Well, thank you so much, Margarita. And thanks for sharing those updates on what's happening that's going to impact our ability to combat the coronavirus here in Iowa. As Margarita talked about, a key consideration in working with Congress to advance policies that would finally guarantee affordable medicines for everyone is the prioritization of the frontline essential workers. We know that healthcare workers and other essential workers in warehouses, grocery stores, doing delivery services and providing public services are at high risk for contracting COVID. And Senator, I'm just going to give a plug right now. My father, Larry Pels, and you know his brother Bill, is on the line, and he says that Bill would be rolling over in his grave if he knew what was going on here. So we know that these frontline people should be the first people to get medicines and vaccines as soon as they're available. And we're going to hear from State Representative Timmy Brown Powers, who in addition to serving as a lawmaker, serves as a full-time frontline healthcare worker. Representative Timmy Brown Powers.
Hi, everybody, and thank you so much for being on with us tonight. I appreciate everybody's interest and concern. And, you know, we are at the COVID clinic tonight. Getting our folks through here in Waterloo, as Supervisor Chris Schwartz mentioned, we are kind of on fire here in Blackhawk County, and so we are working hard to get folks through. And I have to kind of pipe in with Senator Harkin. You know, what we need is this availability for these testing for everybody. What's happening here in Blackhawk County is, you know, we're waiting until we have an outbreak before we're getting in and working with those companies to shut that down. So we're waiting. We hear that someone is tested positive, and by that time, particularly here, we were about two weeks too late. And so we're playing catch up here to try to get Blackhawk County under control And we just had one of our long-term care facilities announce this afternoon that they now have a positive case over in Cedar Falls. So I'm unfortunate that I feel like we are, you know, 2 or 3 weeks behind the eight ball, and now all we can do is do our best to take care of the folks here in Blackhawk County and across Iowa, because we know these outbreaks are happening everywhere. And as we talk about pharmaceutical prices, when we were in the House, you know, we had five bills that we were moving forward in the House that were going to try to help people afford those drug prices. And we had actually gotten two of them through the House. But I'm afraid when we return, and we don't know when that will be, I'm speculating June, I don't know that those bills will get taken up now, so which is sad, because the one bill was a cap on insulin, $100 cap for 30 days, which I realize is still a lot, but it does control it a little bit for folks. It was also a cap on if someone needed partial supply and a prescription, and then when they went around to get the rest of the prescription refilled for whatever reason, if they had that, they couldn't be price gouged. We had some transparency, but all that I think is going to get put by the wayside another whole session because of this break that we've taken. And so that in itself is really disappointing to me, because I thought we were actually starting to make some bipartisan ground going forward. And at this point, I think that's all going to get put by the wayside. And we all know that, you know, federally, and I spoke to Congressman Abby Finkenauer today, and she's working hard and will do what she can on that end of it. But right now, I think this will be my fellow colleagues on the other side, they'll just probably put all this stuff off, and we'll do budgets and they'll send us home. And so Iowans will again not have that opportunity to save any of the costs. And from my patient standpoint, I have patients who, you know, are running up Visa cards, they're making choices whether they can buy food or buy their prescription, or if they're just not going to take the prescription, and then their health declines. And so those are heartbreaking things to hear patients have to tell you that they're doing. And really, Iowans need a break. And I just feel right now that we're not seeing that break for folks in the near future.
Here we go. Thank you. Well, thank you, Timmy, so much. And thanks for your service as a frontline healthcare worker, and also for representing the best interests of Iowa in the legislature, and we really appreciate you, and we from the bottom of our hearts, we want you to stay safe, and thank you again.
We will do that, and thank you guys.
Absolutely. So before we get to our next speaker, we're going to do another quick poll to see what you all think Congress should be doing in light of what we've already heard tonight. So the poll question is, what kind of action should Congress take to ensure that COVID treatments and vaccines will be affordable? Press 1 if it should be block any company from getting monopoly power. 2, legislate that all COVID medicines will be provided at low or no cost. 3, mandate that the Trump administration disclose the secret contracts between the government and drug companies. Or 4, all of the above. So while we're waiting for the poll results, now is a good time to press 0 if you have a question, and one of our folks will answer your call on the line. And to stay up to date on what we're doing at Lower Drug Prices Now Iowa, be sure to join our Facebook page, and you can always get more information and a link to that page at www.iowacan.org. And now for the winning response, and I would have worried if this wasn't it. All of the above. Congress must ensure that COVID treatments and vaccines will be affordable by blocking any company from getting monopoly power to set prices. It must legislate that all COVID medicines will be provided at low or no cost. And we have to have that mandate that the Trump administration disclose any secret contracts between the government and drug companies. So next, we're going to hear from Midge Slater, one of my good friends and one of our wonderful Iowa seniors, who's going to share her story about the difficulty of affording prescriptions on a whole range of medications. Midge, take it away.
Yes. Thank you. Can you hear me?
We sure can.
Okay, excellent. My story about prescriptions is not just mine. It's the compilation of many stories of people who are living on retirement income and health care with different ways of dealing with the inadequacies of the system. For a moment, think about being in line at the pharmacy behind a woman at leaning on her walker who, when told that she had reached the donut hole, got her credit card out to pay for a medication she obviously needed. Think about the owner of a small resale clothing store who was devastated by a conversation with a woman who was selling her clothing because her husband was in need of treatment that they could not afford. Or think about the retired worker whose Social Security reflected the minimum wage jobs she had worked all her life, leaving her with the necessity of choosing between food and health care, food and medicine. And of course, she had to choose food. Well, I'm a union retiree who fought for living wages, affordable health care, and a safe and secure retirement for myself and my family. As one who always considered my health excellent because I had a good, affordable, all-inclusive health care plan to rely on, I found myself dealing with the unexpected and costly illnesses that come when you hit that age, or let's just call it aging. But it seemed reasonable that Social Security and Medicare would pick up where my working benefits left off. I was ready to enter retirement life as I had always dreamed about. But then reality struck with age-related conditions requiring medications for this and that and the other thing, and a cancer that, although treatable, was costly and challenged my resolve. I would need every bit of an expensive supplemental private plan to pick up unpaid charges and medications that now would be needed to maintain a healthy and productive retirement. I truly believe that that is built into the system. And boy, one of the companies that actually I went with were not really providing a lot for people who wanted to do alternative medications or an alternative health care plan, but they were right on top of it when it came to signing up those retirees. So even with the decision to stop paying my portion of long-term care to save money, which I did because they can increase every year for long-term care insurance without even giving any idea as to why that increase happened. My income was not adequate for covering the payments on an ongoing basis. The health retirement account provided by my former employer paid expenses through all but 4 months. So I work a part-time job to make payments on those supplemental programs. When automatic deduction from my account came up short during the first year of this new program, the supplemental plan was discontinued and we had to fight to get it restored. This is more than any senior should have to live with, especially if they had never been through the system and didn't know what to do. Everyone deserves to have a happy and financially secure retirement. They should continue to work because they want to, not because they have to. Social Security should be increased and Medicare should be expanded to include the real costs for seniors, such as dental, vision, and hearing. As I began to uncover those unending out-of-pocket expenses, I realized that too many people have to choose between food and medicine or continue to work until they die. One way in which I realized that, it was similar to Senator Harkin's experience. When I was in line seeing that woman who absolutely was devastated because she was in the donut hole, I was getting the eye drops for the cataract surgery. Now, those eye drops are necessary. You can't go and get them non-prescription. They are absolutely necessary for the surgery, but they're not covered. They're not covered by Medicare, and they were not covered by my insurance. So much for that. And then when I went to get my my shots for shingles, which I had experienced and is something I never wanted to do again, insurance didn't cover that. So because I was Medicare, I got a deduction, but I still had to make a payment. I believe this can be fixed. We need to educate people about the decisions that elected officials are making that impact their lives as seniors, retirees, and people who need assistance. That is the point at which my story really becomes the story of many, not unique to me, but shared by those who have fewer options than I do. I truly believe pharma has made money on seniors for a very long time. Now I know. Now I can talk about it even more than I did before. Price gouging is not new, but it has been accelerated during our current pandemic. And although I say to somebody, listen, you can't charge that because of this, and I threaten turning them over to the Attorney General for a report, they still kind of give the idea, well, just go right ahead. One of my experiences with a drug company that sends by mail was a copay of, actually I paid for it, $98.60 for a topical gel that is a treatment for rosacea. Now, if anybody has rosacea, they know that stress is the main cause of rosacea. Well, I'm here to tell you, my rosacea has really been blossoming. So I had to get this prescription, actually on a new prescription, but because my monthly payment to this mail order drug company went down, I went, wow, that's unbelievable. Well, the deductible was added. So my $98.60 payment will continue for, well, I'm not really sure, $484 is the actual increase in the deductible. It's $484. And until that's met, I will get no reprieve on that topical gel. So that I didn't know. That was a well-hidden detail when I signed up for that plan. And it's just too bad that we have to sign up for any supplemental plan. I think that people who are against Medicare for All don't understand. That is not free. I pay for that every month out of my Social Security check. So that Medicare is not a free insurance coverage. And doggone it, I think that is another level that's added for those pharmaceutical companies to understand that they're getting me here, they're getting me here, they're getting me here, and then they're getting me every month when my Social Security deduction is made for my Medicare payment. So I'm really glad that I had an opportunity to speak on that because, you know, I was a part of the Iowa Alliance for Retired Americans. I actually was a staff person for them and then was local president until last October. because we need to share this information. We need to share this expertise. But we just received the 2019 voting record for every single member of Congress, and it has listed all of the senators and representatives from every state and how they voted on the 10 top senior issues last year. I highly recommend that people order that by going to retiredamericans.org and saying they would like to have a copy of that voting record, or you can actually access it, I believe. It's there and you can print it out. It's scary. It's very, very scary since 2016. That is my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you so much, Mitt, for sharing your thoughts with us.
You bet.
We agree, you know, this current crisis is highlighting the reality and actually the heartbreak of many of our seniors and vulnerable citizens. And it just shows us that we need to be able to curb monopoly power. We need to be able to negotiate prices and have accountability for how drug companies spend the tax money they get for research and innovation. We've had a few questions come in, and they're really more comments about some of the things that have come up. And one of them that from Anita is, will there be a recording of the call? And yes, there will. And we can send that out, Anita, to you, and we'll put it on our website when we're done. Another was about both the Senator and Midge talked about having to shop around for the prices of their medications. And, you know, there are people in rural Iowa, as Susie says, that they just have the one pharmacy nearby, and that is just not right. It's not the right thing to do. So that's my on my little bandwagon there. So now we're going to go ahead and take a few questions from attendees. And our first question is from Matt Sinovic in Des Moines. And Matt,
hi, Sue. Thank you so much.
There you go. You're very welcome.
I'm here. Yep, I am here. Thanks so much for having hosting this call tonight, to all the groups sponsoring this, and all the wonderful speakers from Senator Harkin to Margarita to Representative Brown Powers and Midge. It's always wonderful to hear your voice. Sue, you and I have worked together on a variety of issues. I work with Progress Iowa and the Protect Our Care campaign. And there's so many different coalition partners that do this work. And one of the things that we've seen, and it's been echoed on this call time after time, is that Iowans are scared about their health care and scared about the cost of prescription drugs going up. We see that in the work with the working families that we talk to on a regular basis. We see that from people calling and emailing and contacting us and all of our great coalition partners. And this call to action that has been repeated from Senator Harkin to Margarita to all the speakers today is that we need to contact our senators and our representatives. And I totally agree. In fact, for everyone listening, if you want to write down Senator Joni Ernst's phone number, it's 202-224-3254. But part of that citizen engagement is broken when pharmaceutical companies, drug companies, healthcare business interests donate so much special interest money to our elected officials. And Senator Ernst has taken so much money from big pharma and from those kind of health industry folks. And the Center for Responsive Politics has said that she's taken millions from special interests. So my question is for any speaker that wants to address this, for Senator Harkin, how did they combat that when he was in the Senate? For Margarita, for Representative Brown Powers, or you, Sue, or Midge, how do we fight back against this system when there are people like Senator Ernst in office who are taking millions from special interests and really not, in my opinion, advocating on behalf of Iowa and our working families.
Well, Mike, this is Tom Harkin. There's nothing as so powerful as the force of a united citizenry petitioning their senators. I can tell you after all my long years, the best things I learned were at town meetings when people that came in that didn't agree with me and would confront me. And then I'd have to read some more and study some more and get more input. So I just say, whenever your congressperson or your senator is in a town or for a meeting, go there. Make your voice heard. Secondly, make sure that the phone calls get in. I'm telling you, the staff there, they do log those phone calls, and they log yes or no or what it's about. And I'm telling you, it should have an effect. Let me put it that way. It should have an effect. But organize. That's all I can tell you. The different groups that are here, ICANN, Progress Iowa, other ones there, just organize a really vibrant and active citizenry in the state of Iowa. This issue, on this issue of lowering drug prices, it's...
And I think that we're all sitting at home now, or most of us are, and we have some time on our hands, so maybe this is the time. Matt, maybe you could give us that phone number again, and people can write it down, and we can just all call in.
I would love to, Sue, and Senator Harkin, thank you for that answer as well. Organize is always great advice. But the number for Senator Ernst's office is 202-224-3254. I'll give it one more time if that's all right, Sue.
Sure.
It is 202-224-3254. Call Senator Ernst and tell her to start to represent working families in this state.
Very good.
Thank you.
This is Tom again. I think that number is the general.
Senator Harkin, you're cutting out there. We're not able to hear you.
Well, let me say this again. I think that phone number is the general number for the U.S. Senate. So when you get it, you have to ask the specific senator's office. I'm sorry,
okay.
I don't have the information right in front of me now, but there is a more specific number for each senator's office, Senator Grassley, Senator Ernst, every other senator. But you can get them through that number you just got. When the operator answers, you just say, Senator Ernst from Iowa, and they will transfer you to that office.
Wonderful. Okay, well, I think we're going to move on to our next comment and question, and we are getting really close on time here, so sorry if we have to keep it a little short, but we're going to hear from Reverend Abraham Funches from Waterloo.
Yes, thank you so much for the opportunity. I want to thank Senator Tom Harkin and all of the organizers for making this happen, and I appreciate the opportunity to ask a question. I work as director of human rights here in the city of Waterloo, but I also serve as a local pastor. And we're very familiar with the data that show that obviously there were health disparities within the black and brown community and the poor community well before COVID even hit. And COVID has now exacerbated the situation. And as we expected, of course, once again, black and brown communities, poor communities, are disproportionately reflected in the numbers of those who are testing positive for COVID-19. It's caused us to think a little bit about what will happen next. And we know that these are unusual times. But in addition to, you know, emphasizing increased access to PPE for those who are working in some of the essential positions like in restaurants or in meatpacking plants, that kind of thing, I guess we have a question about what do we do to stop, for instance, any steep launch pricing of new drugs that could target these marginalized communities in light of what's going on with asthma, diabetes, heart problems, hypertension, et cetera. What will be done to stop price hikes on existing medications that will be used to target these populations? And, of course, I heard organize, organize, organize. I'm a great believer in that. I certainly agree. Maybe we can be even more specific. Is there something, for instance, written somewhere in code that is 40 calls that have to be made before something really gets attention? I don't know, but I want to be supportive of all of our legislators and do the best we can from an organizational standpoint to really make an impact. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Reverend Clemson.
Hello. Hi, Sue, this
yep.
is Tom Harkin again.
Yep.
Please keep interrupting. I want to apologize to Lauren. He was absolutely right. That number for Joni Ernst, 3254, is exactly right. I was wrong.
Perfect. Well,
you know
that happens every now and again.
You know why it got the Senate number is 3121, but I got what I don't, what I can't believe now that I just saw this number, is that was my original phone number in the U.S. Senate when I went to the Senate.
Yep, that's right. So
all of you on this call at 202-224-3254 is Senator Ernst's proper number. Thank you.
Very good. And I think the point that Reverend Funch has had is very true. Prescription drug prices are going up, and it's absolutely ridiculous. And that is one of the things that we're working on here at Lower Drug Prices Now Iowa. So stick with us, and we'll just keep fighting for it. And we have one last question, or actually it's probably more of a comment, from our county supervisor in Blackhawk County, Chris Schwartz. And Chris, you have a couple of minutes here. So.
Yep, I'll be really quick. And I just want to thank you, Sue, and thank you everybody on the call tonight. You're hearing from a lot of folks from Waterloo. My friend Timmy Brown Powers, whose birthday is this evening, and Reverend Funches. But you're hearing a lot from Waterloo tonight because we are a community in crisis. We are really at a breaking point with Tyson's Food Corporation here, where there's been an outbreak of COVID-19 in the meat processing plant. And we've all been working our hardest to get the plant closed down so we can get adequate testing and measures in place. And just being met with roadblock after roadblock, whether it's from the corporation or whether it's from our governor, who is burying her head in the sand. And so my concern related to prescription drug cost and profiteering is really going to be over testing. And I've just got a lot of red flags going on right now about when and how much and how accessible testing is really going to become for our community. Last week, you know, the governor said on Thursday that she was sending 1,500 tests to our community. Those arrived, but then the next day she said she was sending an additional 2,700 tests so we could test everybody at Tyson's, every employee, because there are 2,700 employees there. That hasn't happened yet. We were supposed to be getting these Abbott machines, and it was unclear where all those went. Reports that one went to Iowa Falls instead, which has four cases of COVID-19, and then concerns about whether these tests are even accurate. Our medical providers are worried about the reports that they are giving 60 to 70% false negatives. So this quick testing that people are putting so much hope into might not be something we can rely on. And then today the governor announced more details about this Test Iowa program. And one of the Test Iowa program sites is supposed to be here in Waterloo. And people go to the website and they fill out their questionnaire and see if they qualify. And then they're given a QR code. And a QR code, many people maybe don't know what that is. It's an image that you scan on your phone and have to print out or scan on your phone to drive up to this test site, and they scan it for you. But there's a big technology gap in our community, and many of the poor working class people that are most at danger of COVID-19, one, might not have smartphones, two, might not know what a QR code is. And so it's really, really just alarming. And then to find out that the contract for this is going to a company named DOMA, and I'm just now getting into my research on them, but they are being sued twice this year, within the last year already, by their shareholders suing the company. You've got the CEO, Josh James, who has been on record making really questionable remarks about LGBTQ people, people of color, and women. And this is a billionaire that is lining the pockets of the RNC. And now they have this contract here in Iowa to do this testing. And so it's really, really alarming. And we really, like I said, we are a community in crisis, and it just breaks my heart. It's reassuring to hear the voice of Tom Harkin tonight. It breaks my heart that we don't have a senator in Iowa right now fighting for us. We haven't heard anything from Senator Grassley or Senator Ernst on this, and it's terrible.
Well, thank you, Chris, and I think we can all agree with that. I want to give a special thanks to all of our guests. And it was wonderful to hear your perspectives, and you can rest assured that we'll be calling on you again to help us make this critical case to lawmakers. What can you do? We want to thank all of our listeners. We've had a lot of Iowans and obviously some people from out of state also. Join us. Go to lowerdrugprisesnow.org to learn more and sign on. Stay in touch. Keep up to date. Go to www.iowacan.org. And we'll keep you up to date with what's going on. I know a lot of people here don't have internet access. I'm going to give you the ICANN phone number. And if you have a question or comment or if we can help, call 319-354-8116. I'll give that again at the end of the call. One of the most important things you can do is contact our senators. Tell them to use their influence to ensure that these medicines and vaccines are affordable and that there's clear language in the next relief package. You know, it's up to all of us. It absolutely cannot be business as usual. We're only as healthy as the least healthy among us, and the time is now to put the health of Iowans, not drug company profits and political posturing, first. So again, the phone number, 319-354-8116. Thanks to everyone for listening, and thanks to all of our speakers. Good night.